Hi, I'm James White from the Solution Series. Once again, thanks so much for joining us here. And we're brought to you by the Solari Report and Corey'sDigs.com. And I am joined by the founder and editor at Corey's Digs, Corey Lynn, as always. Corey, thanks so much for being here with me once again on the Solution Series.
I'm super excited to be here. This is going to be a fantastic episode. I have so many questions.
Oh, yeah, it is going to be a fantastic episode. Our guest is very knowledgeable about the topic here. We're talking about communications, radio communications, grid-down communications, mesh networks, ham radio. But let me give our guest, John Jacob, a proper introduction. John Jacob Schmidt is the founder and national director of AMRON, the American Redoubt Radio Operators Network, established in 2011. It is a Patriot-oriented network of radio operators which trains for disasters and civil defense emergencies. John Jacob is also the voice behind the microphone of Radio Free Readout, the weekly podcast addressing conservative Christian patriot issues. He is joined by his co-host and wife, Lady Liberty, on the Morning Commute radio show, which airs at 7 a.m. each morning out of Spokane, Washington. The Morning Commute airs on the American Christian Network affiliate, Liberty Broadcasting, on both AM and FM stations. John Jacob was a communications specialist with 5th Special Forces Group and 3rd Special Forces Group at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and served in Desert Storm with 3rd Group. John Jacob Schmidt, thanks so much for joining us here on the Solution Series.
Hey, always a pleasure to talk to you, Jim. Thank you. And a pleasure to meet Corey for the first time also. I've seen her work and read her postings and articles. And so, yeah, it's a treat.
Well, it's a treat for all of us. This should be a great broadcast. John, let me start off with this, if I can. You notice, in a wartime, we're going to talk about solutions, but in a wartime situation, what always happens first? One side always tries to take out the communications of the other side, which goes to show you, it's almost the first thing that they do in a combat scenario, which goes to show you that the communications portion of things is super duper important. Let's just start there as a foundation, John, and just build from that. Over to you.
Well, that's an excellent foundation, and AMRON exists for providing emergency and unconventional communications for disasters and civil defense. We need to prepare for that as citizens to be able to share information, be informed, share information with others, be informed ourselves, and be able to help our communities as much as we can, cope with that type of an event.
So there are mechanisms that can be put in place to protect your electronic equipment in case of that type of some of the scenarios you mentioned. So really, John, the communication capability that you want to maintain and keep in place, you're not necessarily worried about reaching people 3 or 4 states away, although I know there's some ability to do that. You really want to probably start local around your own neighborhood and set up some sort of a local type of a communication network. Is that accurate?
Well, yeah, and really you need all of it. Your highest priority is what's going on right there in your own neighborhood, and then your community, and then your state, your surrounding counties, your region, and then, you work outward from there. But it's all important, but you don't want to neglect one for the other. Some folks are really into HF, long distance radio, and they really neglect the short range communications, so that they know what's going on in their own communities. And then there's folks that they don't care what's going on 2 states over. They just want their handheld radio, and they want to be able to talk to their friend down the street or their family members, and they really could care less about what's happening outside of their area. But, there's a case to be made for having, a total situational awareness. And although AMRON is made up of a lot of really dedicated communication specialists that, their sensors are out and they're gathering all of it from local to, national and continental. But it really does need to be a total package, and you don't have to be a communications expert to at least stay informed. Venezuela was a really good example of that several years ago when their country was collapsing. They had fighting going on all over the place. They had criminal elements that were organizing, setting up checkpoints, The people had no power. They had no food. Their shipments stopped because of checkpoints. And, you know, they were running out of food. But the common theme that we see here is people are just as hungry for information as they are for food. And they don't, they have no idea what's going on. They know what's going on in their village, but they don't know why supplies aren't getting into them yet. They don't know what's going on at the Capitol. Do we even have a government? Who's in charge? When is help coming? Is help coming? You know, this type of thing, you know, it's really great to know what's going on in your neighborhood, but you also need to know what's going on outside the area that could be affecting you directly or indirectly. And just this year, right before Russia went into Ukraine, I don't know if you remember, but the government of Kazakhstan collapsed. And there's rampant crime. They lost power. They lost internet, cell phones, everything. And there's another headline. I cut off the clip. These people are meeting at this bakery to see if there's food, but it turned out to be a meeting point to share information. Because, and the headline ran, the people are just as they're just as hungry for bread as they are for information. And we see this common theme over and over. What they didn't know was that the Russian military, to help stabilize the situation when the Kazakhstan government collapsed, and these people are completely grid down, they, I wouldn't call it an invasion, but the Russian military rolled in force into Kazakhstan. So there were people in villages standing around, you know, at the bakery trying to find out what's going on, who had no idea that, you know, a couple hundred kilometers away was a foreign military, you know, convoys that were headed their direction.
Corey, do you have anything?
And they had no idea.
Sorry, Johnny. Corey, do you have anything you want to add? I was going to ask him about the Baofeng. When you talk about communications, I think I have a couple of Baofeng radios. They're sort of the starter set. But they're very popular, and I've got a lot of great, heard a lot of great things about them, which is not a paid endorsement by any means. But is that the type of thing you're talking about, John, having that communication? Because I don't know the range on those things, but I know you can pick up a lot of local stuff on with the, those Baofengs.
Yeah, those really are designed for very local communications. They're designed really specifically with ham radio in mind. The antennas, the electronics, everything in there is tuned for that ham radio range. Even though you can program frequencies outside of the ham radio spectrum, so you can listen to your local fire, your EMS, your police, your local business bands, so your towing company, your taxi cab company, you know, the hospital, the lumber yard, you know, they all have frequencies that you can program into those as well. They don't transmit well because of the antennas, but yeah, it's a good way to stay informed. I think that's a great starting point. It's one of the things that I was hoping to get to is, you know, folks say, you know, where do I start? And the answer is, you know, local. Start locally. Be able to, if you and your family need to convoy out of town, you want to stay in communication with each other. Neighbors around the area, you want to be able to stay informed. If you've got, you know, criminal dirtbags, you know, prowling neighborhoods, because, you know, you're grid down and they're taking, you know, advantage of the opportunity, you want to be able to share information with your neighbors for security and also, you know, to stay informed. Now, even if you're not a licensed ham operator, get those, your local ham radio repeater frequencies programmed in, and it's super easy. So we'll just start local here. And because so many people have the Baofengs and they're so prolific, we'll talk about those. But before that, I want to say that if you can, I strongly recommend take the nosebleed, pay a little more for, you know, Japanese made, you know, like Yaesu or ICOM type of handhelds. As much as you can, wean yourself off of Chinese-made products. First of all, we're supporting a communist regime when anytime we buy anything from them. But more importantly, the Chinese see everything as a battlefield. Every from education to social media to even the products they sell to us. So I'm not I would not be surprised if they decided to finally throw down with Taiwan and the U.S. or whoever, that at the flip of a switch, you could just find your Baofeng not working, you know, where, you know, maybe other models that are not Chinese made, you know, are continuing to work. It's a great thing to get your entire country all, you know, using your products as a pacifier, and then they're a sworn enemy to you. So if I were them, I would build in the ability to kill all electronics, you know, that I've sold to them. There's a lot of electronics.
Corey, do you have a question?
Go ahead.
Yeah. So I just wanted to interject. So what I've been working with, and ask you a couple questions regarding it that I think might be helpful for people. So I recently did pick up a couple of the Baofengs, the F8HP, and what I've found is, you know, and I have a tech person helping me with this, and we downloaded Chirp, and we set up a bunch of programs on there. And there's a few things I'm wondering about. One is we tested it out as far as local communication, just on the FRS channel, you know, family friendly, where people can talk to their family members if you don't have a license. And we basically were able to hit about a mile and a half with a little bit of static, easy to hear the person, but you go beyond that and you start losing them. And so one question I had is, if you have two family members, you know, that are within, say, 2 miles of each other, is it possible to add like an antenna to the roof to try to, extend that reception a little better? Obviously, I've already expanded to the additional antenna. I have a GMRS antenna on it. So that's one question. But then you had mentioned the repeaters, finding the repeaters to expand that. And I'm wondering if there's what the easiest way is to locate those repeaters.
Well, that is just a whole string of awesome stuff that, yeah, I'm looking forward to jumping into. Okay. Remember when I said these are designed for amateur radio. So right. The antennas, in any radio communications, it's all about the antenna. And what the little rubber duck antenna that comes with the Baofeng is just about as close as you can get to not having an antenna.
They're
super poor, but they're compact. They're portable. So when you program frequencies into those that are outside of the amateur radio bands, your efficiency drops way off. When you press the microphone button on a radio, energy goes down that wire and out the antenna, and it's either going to be in the form of a radio signal or heat. And when you have the higher the heat you have, what we call standing wave ratio, or SWR, when your SWR gets to a certain point, all you're doing is cooking your radio, and you have very, very little energy being translated into signal. So there are antennas that are made for FRS bands and the MERS bands that you can get. And so shop for those. Probably cost you, you know, 18 or 20 bucks. But you'll see your range will increase significantly from that mile and a half. You'll get more than that out of a bubble pack FRS radio that you buy from Walmart. You'll get better range from those radios, which are putting out less power because the antennas are tuned specifically right dead center in the middle of your FRS frequencies.
Sorry, you're talking about an antenna directly on the handheld radio, not an additional antenna, say, on the roof, for example.
That was the next thing I was going to say. I'm just talking about an antenna that screws directly into the radio itself.
Right.
Get one that's tuned for the bands that you're operating in. Now, anytime you can get that antenna up and outside and as high as possible, you're going to see very noticeable performance difference, improvement. And so if you have an antenna already that you said you bought that is for FRS and it's outside, that's a huge improvement over just the handheld.
Right.
Now, John, does that help? Does that help with the transmission? Will that also help with the reception? Will you also be able to receive signals
both
farther as well? Both. It goes both ways, two ways.
Yep. Yeah. An antenna that is resonant, that means it's specifically designed for a specific frequency or, you know, a range of frequencies. It will always receive better if it's resonant or tuned, just as well as it will transmit better. So yeah, you're going to see overall improvement. And once again, for reception or transmitting, getting that antenna up in the air as high as you can and outside of a building is going to be a night and day difference.
Yeah, even without that, we were able to pick up on some chatter several states away with just the handheld. But as far as right. transmitting, you know, we were kind of capped at about a mile and a half. That's why I was asking about, you know, roof antenna. And then you had mentioned, how do you pronounce it? Yaesu or Icom?
Yaesu. Y-A-E-S-U.
Y-A-E-S-U. Okay. And those are Japanese. Now, are those analog or digital?
Well, they make both. They make digital and analog.
What do you recommend as far as digital? Because one of the things we've seen is in some areas, they've switched over to, like, your emergency services and whatnot have switched over to digital. So you can't, it's difficult trying to pick them up on analog.
Well, you're talking about some pretty advanced stuff there. You won't be able to pick up a digital signal on analog. Okay. And even with a digital, like a digital, what's called DMR, digital mobile radio, you won't be able to pick those up, say emergency services, sheriff's department, fire, and those, with even a digital, a DMR ham radio, because they're using what's called the APCO 25 or P25 okay. encoded digital encoding. So what I was going to say is, you know, in that kind of the concentric layers of communications, you want two-way communications between you and your group, and just analog your Baofeng's fine. You know, that's fine. And, you know, that'll get the job done. But for staying informed, I strongly recommend a scanner radio that will pick everything up from your airport, your EMS, and get one that has P25 decoding capabilities.
Like a Bearcat. Like a Bearcat, like a top of the line Bearcat. They're good model, Bearcat?
Yeah. Yeah. The Uniden. Well, Uniden specifically, they make a few different models that will receive analog and digital, and it will decode P25, which, you know, more and more of our emergency services are going to. And it will decode that. And that's for your situational awareness, to stay informed of what's going on in your community and, you know, around you in your area. And that will give you listening capabilities, situational awareness you won't get from a handheld ham radio.
And you said those are pretty expensive?
Yeah, like, for example, I would say probably one of the easiest to use, user-friendly models out there is the Uniden Home Patrol. They run about $450 to $550, and they will decode P25. But what's really slick about those is a lot of scanners are really practically have to be, you know, a super geek to program them sometimes. But with that, you just punch in your zip code for the area that you're in or the area you're going to be traveling to or through. If you're traveling, you can just, as you go, you can just punch in the new zip code and it automatically brings up all of the frequencies in that area.
That's
your local hospital, your police, fire, your airport, I mean, the Forest Service,
they're about
Department of Transportation.
Bucks. They're about $450, $444. Yeah, you were right on. You're right on. It does the P25 as well. Weather alert. Yep. It's good stuff. Wow.
Yep.
Nice. This puts has got a
digital
display.
Yeah, they're really slick. I wish I had one. I don't have a home patrol, but I do have a unit and scanner that decodes in P25. And it's pretty awesome. It's pretty cool. But I got one off eBay that somebody was just selling. I got it for like $150 cheaper than, you know, buying it new. And that's how I scored that one. But that's quite a bit more complex to program. So the home controls are really slick.
So in that case, it would probably pick up more. Or so you were starting to say something about some of the emergency services have it like encoded, so you're not going to be able to pick it up. Or is that what you're referring to when you talk about the P25?
P25 is the encoding language. It's APCO 25. It's just a digital encoding.
Okay.
It's just the language, the computer language that it speaks to be able to transmit and receive. So with those, with the scanner, of course, you can't transmit, but you can receive, and they do decode P25. So that lets you listen in on a lot of your emergency services. Now, that doesn't address encryption. Some of your sheriff's department, SWAT team, or, you know, some of these other, or sometimes the departments are going with all encryption. Usually that's short-lived, though, because it's a big pain and they don't have interoperability with other agencies, and it's expensive, and usually the person gets tagged with maintaining it, loses interest, and usually the department will just get rid of it after a while, except for maybe like their HRT, you know, SWAT teams, tactical teams. They'll keep encryption. But the rest of it is not encrypted. It's just encoded.
Okay. You
know, like the signal coming in on your television from your local news stations are encoded with a digital encoding, and your television has the right software in it to decode that. You can watch TV.
John, your audio dropped off a little bit. You there?
Mine did?
Oh, there you go. You're back.
Okay. There you go. I have a question can you explain to people as far as what FRS is, you know, to be able to communicate licensed versus unlicensed, and what types of licenses people might be able to get if they wanted to go that route?
Right. Yeah. Well, we're huge proponents of getting your ham license for a number of different reasons, but what you're talking about is FRS. And then there are three, we call the CH3 project within Amron, and that's really how Amron got started. You do not need a license for the FRS, you know, Family Radio Service. You don't need a license for MERS, that's the Multi-Use Radio Service, or CB, Citizens Band. Those three are very common out there, and you don't need a license for those, and, you know, they vary between, you know, VHF, UHF, and CB is kind of like right on the edge of HF. And each of those perform differently. They behave differently. But generally, you'll find that you can program MERS and FRS frequencies into a Baofeng, and you can transmit on it, but it won't give you the performance that you're looking for unless you get the proper antenna that's designed for the frequency that you're operating on. So there are ways, and Amron started as a network of preparedness families that had kind of a mutual assistance group, which decided to a couple of people have an FRS and a MERS. This family over here has a CB and FRS, and they all had something, a little mix of something different. So everybody decided to, whatever you've got, turn to channel 3. In case we need to link up with each other and share information. So it was just kind of a simplified, standardized and simplified communications plan. So if you got MERS or if you got FRS, you got CB, everybody, whatever you have, turn to channel 3. So the two people with FRS can talk to each other. The two people with CBs, they can talk to each other. And several of them had both, or some had all three. There is an intrusion alarm, entry alarm system called the Dakota Alert that's, you know, pretty popular. That uses MERS. So several of the families have those sensors you put at your driveway and it's on an alert, you know, alert zone 1.
My friend has one of those. Yeah, my friend's got one of those. Those are pretty cool.
Yeah, so those are MERS radios. And they're on the MERS frequencies. And you could program that in. Matter of fact, I had a handheld radio that I programmed FRS and MERS into. And it's kind of interesting. Throughout the day, you can hear every now and then, alert, zone two, you know. So somebody out there somewhere has, a lot of people have them, but you can listen to each other's, you can listen, pick up people's Dakota alerts, putting those out.
Yeah, that's exactly what it says. So, I've been at her house, and you hear it. Alert in zone two, and then the radio picks up, and someone has to check in to make sure that their friend, not foe, right. And that's really pretty cool. They have a 25-acre plot, and they have the perimeter. They have those on the perimeter, so you really they're immediately alerted if someone breaks their property line and comes across the line. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty sweet.
That is cool.
Yeah. They're cool setups, but you know, they're. Anybody with a scanner or anybody with a radio that programs those MERS frequencies in there can hear that too. So just be aware of that.
So, John,
as far as the licensing goes, like on the little handhelds, I don't remember where I read this, but is it that you can get a license for GMRS if you wanted to just talk on the small handhelds, where there's not a test involved or something, and then the family can all use it as well. But then what you're suggesting is the full license for, you know, because your network's really cool. We need to get more into your network and how that works. I think that's important for preparedness.
Well, okay. What you're talking about is GMRS, and if people want to get started on that, it is really growing rapidly, and it is a great way for a community to all stay connected. And even if you're in a mountainous area, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, Washington, super mountainous. And so we're seeing more and more of these folks get their GMRS licenses. It covers, $35 for 10 years. It covers your entire family. And that uses, GMRS, which is basically the same thing as FRS. They share frequencies. And with those, you can get a repeater to put up on top somebody's house, you know, somebody at a high point or maybe up on a mountain. And then that way you can communicate because VHF and UHF, that's your MERS, your MERS and FRF, and your 2 meter, 70 centimeter ham, those are all VHF and UHF, which are line of sight. So if you've got a mountain between you, you have to have a repeater for you guys to be able to talk to each other, or a physical person standing up there relaying your traffic back and forth.
Are the repeaters expensive?
Yes. Yes, okay. They are. Let's see. When's the last
time? Not looked into them.
Probably $600 to $1,000. Now, if you want to learn more, you can go to here's the website, mygmrs.com. I think it's .com. Mygmrs.com. And they've got forums there. They've got all the information on how to get your GMRS license, how to locate repeaters in your area, and probably a repeater in your area pretty much anywhere you live.
I'm
now
on the website now.
It's really taking off.
I'm on the website now if you want me to check something.
Yeah, and the repeaters, they sell repeaters there. They sell transceivers, you know, radio, two-way radios. And they've got all the information and postings and forums and everything else to help you get up and running on that.
Do you think now, this might be a good kind of introduction for people before they were to move into, a full license and expand out further?
Well, that is a full license. The GMRS is that's a full license. And then there's the amateur radio license. And, that's a separate license. And what I wanted to say, though, on GMRS, and it's a wonderful thing, but everybody that's a ham operator that also gets into GMRS that have all said, and I can attest to this, the range is extremely limited compared to ham radio. They're limited on their, the maximum power output, and plus you're dealing with a UHF frequency, and they're really great close up, but they don't have the range, they just don't have the punch that your VHF radios have. So when you get into ham radio, a very, very popular band is what's called the 2 meter band. That's VHF. You get a lot more range. You can have, 100-watt transmitters. And they're usually supported by, your local amateur radio clubs. And so they maintain repeaters and, some great source of help there in your local communities for that. And so when you get into amateur radio, it opens you up to way more than just voice. We're very big proponents of digital modes. And I don't mean like digital DMR, digital mobile radio. I mean, like faxing and texting over the air. So you can send each other, we can literally send each other email over the air. We can send text files without any outside infrastructure. If the internet goes down, we can still do the same thing. It's just slower than the internet.
Now, do you have to
still email each other?
I was just wondering, in that case, do you have to have, if you're not talking, if you're, if you're just listening, but you're not transmitting, but you wanted to be able to send a text or email, do you have to be licensed for that? Is it kind of all kit and caboodle?
Yeah. Yes, you do. You have to be licensed as a technician, and that allows you to operate UHF, VHF, and you can operate on the HF bands, but only with Morse code, CW. And then you upgrade to general, and that gives you the ability to operate on the HF bands. And that's where we're able to share information and pass files, situation reports, emails and stuff, several states away. So, it's a nationwide network. So a lot of our operators are able to communicate locally, but they can also take a situation report. Say if you have a train derailment with, chemical spill and green gaseous cloud, moving north, northeast, you can get on the air and you can tell people in the next county, even the neighboring state, the situation that you've got going on, where you are, or somebody's trapped in on the other side of the mountains in Washington or Oregon, and we have a massive earthquake. With HF, you're able to put out a situation report the next state over or multiple states away, and say, we have injured people here. This person needs to be life flighted out of here. You just can't do that with VHF, UHF. You're very limited. And of course, in that type of earthquake scenario, your repeaters probably, most likely will not be working either.
No. So, can those with just the handheld ham radios at least be able to hear those transmissions, or if they have the repeaters going out across states into local networks?
Well, yeah. Okay. VHF and UHF, like your Baofengs, you cannot listen to HF communications. For that, you need a shortwave radio. And so usually when I teach communications, there's that concentric circles of communications. First start local, being able to talk to your group and your family, then be able to receive everything around you, from the airport to the fire, EMS, paramedics, your road maintenance, everything around you, you can listen to stay informed. The next layer in that is to, even if you don't get licensed and be able to transmit, at least get the ability to receive HF communications. And there are several ways to do that, because even if you have a linked repeater system on your small handhelds there, maybe right now, today, you can hit that repeater and talk to somebody the next state over, because they're relying on a series of 3 or 4, 5, 6 linked repeaters. And so you have people that, hundreds of miles away that can talk to each other on their handheld because they're using those. But you have to be licensed to be able to take advantage of that. So let's say a major Cascadia subduction zone, massive earthquake off the coast of Oregon, Washington. All those repeaters will likely, the type of earthquake they're talking about breaks stuff. Cyber attacks break stuff. Wildfires that we've had over here, where fires went up over the tops of mountains and melted, literally melted all the towers. So the state patrol, EMS, ham radio, the local broadcasting station, everything went down. And so we deployed over there, and even their landline went down because it was that use their above ground telephone pole power poles. The fire took all that out. So they had no landline. They had nothing. They had no way to communicate outside of this little town in this valley until we showed up. And we're able to email their loved ones outside the area and send texts to their phones using ham radio. And
that's really cool.
So we sent a lot of welfare traffic out because, you know, rumors were this town was burnt to the ground. Oh, that town's evacuated. That town's gone. And, when they weren't, right? So there's people have loved ones in other states that they didn't know if their loved ones are alive or made it out of there, or they didn't even know that it wasn't true that the town didn't burn to the ground. So we were able to send emails and texts to their cell phones and their email services over ham radio to let them know that the loved ones are okay. And so there's so many advantages to being licensed. A lot of people, and we see this trend where people, they'll go and buy a ham radio and then they stick it away in an ammo can or something, and they're waiting to use it until the rules don't matter anymore and it's the end of the world, then what's the FCC going to do? They're not going to, so then I'm going to get my stuff out. All these experienced ham operators will tell you, if you don't practice with your gear, you will not communicate when it really matters. It's an ongoing journey of practicing with your gear, troubleshooting it, learning it, becoming intimate with it. And you can't do that if you're not licensed. Other operators on the air won't talk to you if you're not licensed.
You know, Paul Stramer, Johnny, let me interrupt you. Paul Stramer sent me to a website. It's so easy, and you probably know it. It's the ham radio. It's the standard ham radio website everybody goes to. It's got all the information about it. He said it's not that hard to take the test. It doesn't cost that much money. I bookmarked it, but I don't have it. I don't have it here at my fingertips. But it's not a difficult. It's not rocket science to get your ham license. I mean, you don't have to have a Harvard degree here. This is not very difficult, right? You just do a little study, and you can pass it.
Right. Any other concern, people, well, I don't want to be on the government's list. Well, you're already on the government's list. If you have a driver's license, you're on the government's list. Not anything whiz-bang that's like, you know, doesn't belong to preppers or patriots. It's just like restoring antique cars. You're going to find liberals, conservatives, you know, young and old, mostly old, that are into that. It's not like this... they're going to, you know, come after
you. It doesn't out you as a patriot, you're saying. It doesn't, like, out you as a patriot if you want to get your ham license, is what you're kind of getting at, I think.
No, and, you know, I'm at the point where it's not illegal yet to be a patriot, you know. And I think that, you know, it's our survival as a nation is going to be depending on patriots.
Amen to that, bro.
Being patriots, you know, and not lurking in the shadows. I mean, it's, you know, an individual wants to be gray man and you know, unplug so nobody knows who he is. And well, that's fine. That's cool. That's your thing. But we have found much more, by far more benefit from patriots who have met each other, become friends, who regularly work together on the air, who passed information in training and real world emergencies. We've led to welfare traffic and passing information that other people couldn't in real world emergencies. We've led to the rescue of people during floods. We've helped facilitate emergency traffic during hurricanes, floods, wildfires. You know, all of that because people are licensed, they're practicing with their gear, they're proficient, and here's the other thing, too, something I'd like pointing out. This is really important. In 2017, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Vancouver, Northern California, they did a gigantuous scenario-based training exercise called Cascadia Rising.
Right. That's right.
And it was based on this massive earthquake, 9-point-something. I mean, that's where, like, buildings go airborne, all right? I mean... it's a massive earthquake they're expecting. So they based it off of this. Well, it was supposed to be interoperability, interagency thing with the National Guard, with your local county emergency services, the state. They had federal resources, even Canadian and American resources that we're trying to respond to this massive disaster that they're expecting. Well, at the end of it, they did their assessment, and I'm friends with a legislator that actually went to Camp Murray in Olympia, where this was kind of headquartered at, and talked to the head guy that's in charge of emergency, the military department, which is kind of like the Department of Homeland Security for Washington State. And he said, as a legislator, he got the briefing on the results of this training exercise, and they identified their number one weak point was communications. That was their failure point. They did good setting up mobile field hospitals. They did good, you know, with planes that were, you know, loading up cargo, bottled water, and all this. Everything, they had a lot of room for improvement in every area, but the kind of communications was their abysmal failure. Now, and you have to say why, because just prior to this, the year, 2 years leading up to this, they had purchased for these counties these awesome whiz-bang communications mobile vehicles with everything any ham operator would ever dream of having, from mobile Wi-Fi to, you know, HF radio, VHF radio. They had P25 encoded stuff to talk to all the agencies around them. And that was their number one failure point, with a $250,000 communications mobile rig in every county and at the state level. And so the reason why is because, first of all, these people are state employees. It's not their gear. They don't care about it. They play with it once every few months when they have to go do maintenance on it. They're not intimately familiar with their equipment. So they had people that were not qualified to operate almost all of the stuff in their vans. They had no training or qualification. Secondly, for those who did have qualifications, when their gear didn't work, they didn't know how to troubleshoot it. And so their mindset is, if something doesn't work, you fill out a trouble ticket, you turn it in, you get issued a new one. But that doesn't work in a grid down emergency disaster situation. So when you are licensed and you own your equipment, you're training with it, you're becoming familiar with it, you learn what happened, why am I not transmitting? Right now, when you got help available to you, you can get on the ZNet and say, hey, I'm trying to transmit and it's not transmitting. You've got a bunch of other people saying, well, did you try this? Did you try that? Walking you through, and then you learn something. And a month later, during the next practice net, you run into something else, and then you learn how to fix that. So, you know, 2 years later, you're experienced, and when you run into things, you're back up and on the air in seconds. It's nothing. It's a flip of a switch. It's
micro-adjustment. You're so right about that, John. I can certainly directly relate that here to radio. When I first started out and had this new mixing board and everything, and I had so many problems, but now when something comes up,
yeah,
I've already faced it. You know, you broadcast every day. Now that something comes up, right, in the radio world, I'm familiar with it. I know I've covered it before. It's happened before. I can easily overcome it, and you probably even don't even know if you're watching that even anything happened, because I was able to take care of it. But that didn't happen overnight. That's because I do this every day. Like I know the equipment. I work with it. I broadcast with it. So I mean, it's totally brilliant what you just said. It's absolutely brilliant.
So can you?
It's so true. You got to own it.
So can you share with people, because I was, you know, I've been looking around in your site, and I think it's really cool the way you have it structured. In addition to providing all kinds of awesome information for people, you've got these scheduled nets that you do. You've got where people can join, and I believe you have, I'm not sure how many, but thousands of people in this network. And then you've got all the frequencies and channels that people can connect into for their state. So can you, like, explain to people a little bit about that network that you've got going there?
Yeah, absolutely. We do train regularly. We have national and regional nets on the first and third Wednesday and Thursday of the month. And then in between there, almost every night of the week, there's a net going on somewhere on HF and local, VHF, UHF. And they're not everywhere. It's continuing to expand. But if you go to the website and just click on, you know, scheduled nets from that drop down, it's a little confusing at first, because we have national nets, then we have regional nets, and we have local nets. And so it makes you kind of scratch your head trying to figure out, you know, take some time, be patient, and learn to navigate around. So most people starting off, I got my Baofeng. What do I do? Right. A friend helped me program it. You mentioned Chirp. That's C-H-I-R-P. It's free. Everybody should download Chirp. Chirp is a programming software for programming just about every radio out there. And they're adding more all the time. So buy the programming cable with your, spend the extra 10, 20 bucks. Get the programming cable for it. And then learn how to use Chirp so you can program your own radio. But anyway, you'll probably find a local net, and you look around, and you may or may not find a net in your area. Then people are starting nets where one doesn't exist, and it really depends on the leadership, the charisma and leadership of the individuals. Or individual who starts a local Amron net in their area. And, I mean, because there are people that have joined Amron. We have a free membership, but where you really grow and learn about communications and you have tons of support at your fingertips is Amron Core. And, that's $40 a year, and it is worth every penny of it. If communications is important to you. Anything and everything you want to learn about is in our forum, from solar power to DMR, digital mobile radio, to everything, encryption. I mean, it's everything you might be interested in. So people will join up, and then they just turn on their radio, and they say hello to everybody out there. And then they get frustrated because nobody ever answered, and I've been calling out for a year. Well, you got to look to see if there's a net in your area. And we're trying to clean that up, too. There are new nets that are running we don't have on our list. There are nets that somebody moved, their job changed, whatever, and they don't do the net anymore. We're trying to get that cleaned up so we can remove nets off of that list that aren't being ran anymore. So it's an ongoing process, you know, chasing the ball. But if you don't have a net in your area, start one. And the most success that we have found are people that will put on a free emergency communications presentation just to talk about how to tune in. Here's a scanner radio. Here's a Baofeng. This is the importance of emergency communications. Something like that, and start getting a list of people together that agree to meet at a certain time on a certain frequency on a certain day, maybe once a week, maybe every other week, to practice with their gear. Secondly, people that meet regularly, and those are the ones that we see the most success. They'll have 10, 15, 20 check-ins on their nets every time they have a net, because they're also building camaraderie and rapport with each other. They meet once a month and buy coffee and donuts and meet at a VFW hall or someplace that's inexpensive or free. And one time they might help everybody get their program, their radios programmed. The next meeting, maybe they have an antenna building party and somebody puts out a purchase list, buy some copper pipe, buy this, here's your shopping list, and we'll all sit around. You're going to learn how to solder, who don't know, and those of us who do will help you, and we'll all build a J-pole antenna. And then they'll have a barbecue together in the summer and do things together. We're actually learning radio from each other and then doing the nets. Those have the biggest success for local nets. And the biggest thing are people that also incorporate it into preparedness networks. And more communities now, you're finding a preparedness network where they're meeting once a month, and maybe this month they're doing something first aid related, how to put on a tourniquet. Next week it's canning or how to cook in Dutch ovens. The next week, the next meeting, the next month, we'll do radio communications, and we'll talk about our local net and how you can check in. And the next week we'll do this. So when it's something that's incorporated in a bigger package, usually get better attendance and interest than just an Amron radio meeting once a month. Although some of those 20, 30, 40, 50 people meeting once a month, it's just strictly about communications and radio, and they try to do something different each time.
You know, John, you bring up a great point. I've been to a lot of these Patriot meetings here in Kalispell, as you know, this area right here, like yours. So does the readout area, a lot of Patriots here. And I've been to a lot of these Patriot meetings. And you know something? I think of all the meetings, and I've been to dozens and dozens of them, hardly anybody ever talks about emergency communication. Emergency communication is almost never brought up. I mean, you know, a lot of other things are brought up, a lot of other topics. Not communication so much. Why is that? Why is that just, do people just, are they just so, are we just so used to communications? We have phones and we have cell phones. And I mean, we're just, it's just such a natural part of our life that we don't think, is it like a cognitive dissonance? We just don't think where we're going to be without it, because they never discuss it. John, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on that. That's a really, really good point. First of all, we have this pacifier that's, you know, that we're all using right now. It's our cell phones. It works. It always works until it doesn't. And, you know, our internet, all of this stuff. But also, you could say that pretty much with anything else. It's not as cool and sexy as, you know, we're going to cover field stripping an AR-15. We're going to zero our weapons. We're going to teach how to do a tourniquet, you know. That's kind of cool, but the communications kind of scares people off. And here's the thing. Not everybody, just like with your prepper group, and I use this example a lot, not everybody has to go and get their EMT license, but everybody should know how to put on a tourniquet, right?
Right.
But every group
right.
strives to have a licensed EMT in their group and a nurse and, you know, so, not everybody in your group has to be a general class HF capable ham radio operator with all the digital, all this stuff. All you need is one or two of those guys, a primary and a backup. That they are your lifeline for information outside of your community, for calling for help or for getting information to keep everybody else informed. So not everybody has to be a licensed general class ham, but everybody should know how to properly make a radio call on their handheld.
Yeah,
and
now
you find those people that have an interest in it. Not everybody's interested in becoming an EMT. You find the one or two people in your group that are drawn to that, and you support them. And you know, even if you got to collect funds to pay for their course or whatever, you could do the same thing with your HF, your ham radio team. Get one or two people and you know, get behind them and get that capability. And then everybody else in the group, they've got a scanner, they got a handheld radio, maybe a shortwave receiver, and you're good.
That's smart. And then everyone could chip in to get the repeater for the, you know, one or two of the main people that are doing that. So it's, you know, bring
Absolutely.
That cost down. So now you have you have an event coming up. Let's see, I'm trying to think when we're recording this. This is going to actually come out after the event, but is the event that's coming up in September, is that going to be archived, or is that's actually a live practice, isn't it?
Right. Right. It is only over the radio. And basically, we do practice nets all year round. So this is kind of like what we look to as the test. This isn't somebody's like, I just got my Baofeng, now I'm going to participate in T-Rex. And it's the Teotihuacan Readiness Exercise 2022, or T-Rex 2022. It's an annual event. We've done it for, I think this is the 11th year.
Wow. But
we didn't do it in 2020, and COVID and the whole world went absolutely stupid. And people were like, it was a mess. So we skipped it in 2020. But otherwise, it is a scenario-based exercise, and we try to make it realistic. This year is going to be a cyber attack scenario with stuff happening all across the country. And so what we do is we have preloaded traffic that has a control number, and the inject stations have instructions with what time to inject this piece of traffic into the scenario to enhance the scenario. So it enhances the timeline. You might have a train derailment or chemical spill. Might have, you know, a prison break. You can have, you know, different things that are going on for these people to report at a certain point. And some of it's localized traffic. Like, for example, if your bridge goes out on your highway 5 miles up the road, and they have a detour in Montana, the people in Florida, that doesn't even relate to them. You know, but there could be things that are that do relate to you, whether you're in a different state. It could be trends that you start to see. It could be information from other areas could be very valuable to you, even if you're, you know, 1,000, 1,200 miles away. Because as this information starts to get injected over this timeline, over this 3-day exercise, you start to get little pieces of a puzzle and start to put together, and you start to see trends and start to see the size and scope of an event. If your power goes out and your cell phone goes out and you have no internet, how do you know if it's just Kalispell, if it's all of Montana or the whole Pacific Northwest, the entire North American continent?
Right.
How would you know if there was a nuclear explosion in New York City, Washington, D.C., and Chicago at the same time when you went completely grid down and you have no clue? You think, oh, it's a power outage. You know, so information from outside your area, you know, the more you can gather, the more situational awareness you can have about the size and scope of an event and things that might impact you. That village in Kazakhstan might want to know that there's a Russian convoy of 1,200 rigs, military combat and troops headed their way. That's, you know, 200 kilometers away and headed toward them. I would want to know that.
Right. Well, go ahead.
Anyway, that's what this scenario-based training exercise, T-Rex 2022, is September 9th, 10th, and 11th. And, you'll be able to track that, you know, and there will be, if this airs after that event, there will be, you know, after-action reports, and they'll be able to see a lot of the traffic on the T-Rex page that's leading up to the event. But once it kicks off at noon Pacific on Friday, it's like we're grid down. There's no more updates. There's nothing happening on the internet, on the web page. It's like we all just vanish.
Right.
And so the only way you can get information, share information, is over radio. And it's really designed to point out the gaps in people's communications.
Yeah, I think that one of the takeaways of all of this is that if the cell phones and internet goes down, the radio is where you want to go. And I realize some people are looking into, you know, satellite phones, and that may be great to stay in communication with people, but they're so darn expensive. And that's not the same thing as being able to get a wealth of information from multiple people that you would through a radio. Is that accurate?
Right. It's dead on accurate. Okay, you're right back to square one when you decide to get a satellite telephone, which is great in a wildfire. It's great for a hurricane. But when you have to depend on somebody else's infrastructure, especially when we have adversaries that have developed and perfected weapons designed specifically to take out satellites, satellites are a major component of our command and control for our government. And it's naturally going to be a target you can expect to lose service with. You know, cell phones, internet, and in the cables. I mean, they have plans for cutting the physical fiber optic cables on the ocean floors. They have weapons designed specifically to do that. They have weapons specifically designed to take out satellites. So for navigation, for communication, all of that, really, if it's there, and our attitude has always been in any disaster, if you have internet, use it. Use the best, most efficient method that you have, but be prepared to use communications that you require no supporting infrastructure for. AT&T or the satellite company or whatever can't cut you off. They can't censor you. If they're taken out, I can send an email to another guy in another state and have the net relay that to somebody in Florida with no outside supporting infrastructure. We need nobody. We have our own power. We have our own communications. And that's what you want to strive to get to.
John, I can't believe how fast the times went, man. We're almost just at the end of the broadcast. Before we go, can you let people know what would you say people should do that listen to this broadcast? What can they do immediately? I mean, people, you know, I mean, without spending thousands and thousands of dollars, what can people get, let's say, under a $500 or under a $1,000? What equipment would you recommend that they get immediately or as they can afford to and start getting going on this process? I'm sure you're going to recommend getting your ham radio license. That aside, what would you suggest for people that are like new and just starting out, John?
Just starting off, get a couple of handheld radios that you can communicate with your local group. Then get a scanner radio. It doesn't even have to be a P25. There's a lot you can listen to stay informed. I've picked up scanner radio receivers from garage sales for $5, $20 that work great. Have the ability to know what's going on in your area. Secondly, get a shortwave radio receiver with single sideband capabilities. Even if you don't know how to use it yet, get it. Get it in your inventory and then begin learning how to use it. The stuff we put out, you do not have to be licensed to receive ham radio communications, including the digital stuff that we're sending out, situation reports, status reports. All of that you can get with the free to download software. It's free and it's on our website. If you go to Amron.com and type in digital, there are tons of tutorials and postings with links to the software and step-by-step guides on how to set it up. So you can at least stay informed, even if comms isn't your thing, you're not going to get HF capable and you're not going to get licensed, but you do want to stay informed, then do that. You can do all that for under $500 easily.
And just so people know that are listening and may not be watching, Amron is with two R's, AMRRON.com.
That's right.
Yeah, I hit the page plenty of times while we were during the interview. Okay, John, we're going to go into a little bit of overdrive here because there's a topic that's really important that we really have to cover, and that's mesh networks. You know, in a grid down situation, everybody relies on the internet right now. How do we continue to communicate via internet? Is that even possible if there's a grid down situation? Mm-hmm. Is that done via mesh networks? I know we talked previously about ham radios, about how that is an option. You can go to an area that's got everything down. You can get communications with ham radio. But how about mesh networks? How does that work? And is that something that has to be set up ahead of time? Or should we work on it starting now?
Oh, yeah. All of this stuff needs to be started 10 years ago. Because it's all a journey. What we have right now in our hands is technology that they've made it dummy-proof, easy to use, turnkey. The other type of communications, unconventional communications, as we call them, it requires practice, training. There's a learning curve. And, you know, if you want to communicate badly enough, You got to work for it, just like ham radio. You need to become familiar with it. You need to practice with it. You need to grow, and to get licensed. You know, if you're going to get a ham license, you know that it takes preparation. So just like the mesh networks that you're talking about, and there are several different ways to do this. This is a whole another world that we're talking about, and so I'll talk about some of the easier ways to get into that. And, as turnkey as possible for folks that can get into it. Now, like we mentioned before, though, the reason why we stress for the last decade, practice now, get your gear now, you know, get it operational now, is because one day this stuff may not even be available. We're actually running into that. So some of the stuff that I'll talk about, there are waiting lists now, and the supply chain disruptions and everything else. You know, the SHTF is not coming. It's here. And so, you know, get what you can while you can. And it's getting more difficult, but yes, start immediately. If you've got the financial resources, then get into it. And, you know, somebody in every group is more tech savvy than the others. That's your person to start digging in and learning how you want to communicate as a group. So now, as far as mesh networks go, it's real important that everybody understands this is very limited in its reach. No, there are some communities like there's an island community in Puget Sound in the Seattle area. There's no internet. So what they've done is they created a mesh network, and they use broadband to connect several miles away, and they set up a mesh network so everybody who has internet can now connect to this using a mesh system. It's like an intranet, like their own internet, but they've set up a couple nodes that act as gateways to reach out to the regular internet, so they can use email, they can surf the internet just like anyone else. But it took some work to get to that point. And like I said, there's several ways to do it, and it will require some research by the person that's the most tech savvy, in your group to make that happen. So one of those is I'll just mention, and this is probably going to require, I'd say probably the most amount of research. It's called Ubiquiti. And these are Wi-Fi routers and nodes that you set up so you can create your own internet. So among all your neighbors, for example, across town, several miles, actually, if you have elevation where somebody can set these different nodes up, these Ubiquiti, and that's the brand name. It's Ubiquiti, Ubiquiti. And a lot of it's the same type of hardware that you might use in your home for regular internet. But these can be configured so that you can set up a mesh network and communicate. And it's high speed. It's just like having the internet, but only you are able to share this information with each other, set up a central server and share files and pictures and things like that.
That's kind of like an intranet where you're all interacting among each other, but you're not connected to the outside world internet. Is that correct?
You can. Yeah, absolutely. So if just one of those, like the island that I mentioned in Puget Sound, one of those nodes has a broadband connection across the bay, across the sound, several miles away to make an internet connection. So all of the people in this community, they can have their own little internet. So if the internet went down, they could still send text messages to each other. They could send images and emails and things like that to each other within their community. But as long as the internet's up, then they can route through to that server, to that node that connects them to the outside world internet. So it can work both ways, depending on how you configure that.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was getting at.
Yeah, right. Now, there are a couple alternatives for mesh networking, and they vary in price. So, excuse me. I'll name a few of them. One is probably more involved than the others because you have to set it up, and it's really good for texting and texting only. But it's also about the most affordable way that you can set up a mesh network, and that way you can send text messages back and forth to everybody in your group. And these will go several miles, a line of sight, as long as you don't have anything obstructing your signal. And that's called Meshtastic. You can look that up on the internet. There's actually a website dedicated to it. And it's called Meshtastic. Kind of like fantastic, but only mesh network.
John, when you say texting, now are you saying that a person's cell phone is able to then connect into this and you're sending the text through phone? Or are you talking about like an app on
yes.
a computer?
No, that's what I was just going to say. There's an app that you can download. So you use your cell phone to text to each other. And it connects to this Meshtastic device, your node. And you have an antenna outside. And you can use an omnidirectional or a directional antenna. If you have an individual you want to communicate with, you can use a directional antenna. And this information is on meshtastic.org. But it might be, I have it right here. Yep, it's meshtastic.org. And they've got a lot of support, a lot of articles, a lot of guides on how to set it up and use that. And these units are $40 to $50 a piece. So they're really affordable. And you can set those up in a mesh network. And you actually use all the other users become nodes that you can hop across and communicate with. The other thing, too, that's really nice about this, I think it's going to be very important in the future, is that it also incorporates AES 256 encryption. So unlike, you know, ham radio or any type of other radio where you're talking over the air or even sending digital mode stuff over the air, anybody else with a receiver capturing that can capture your communications. There could be a time in the future when you want what you're saying or coordinating with other people in your group to be private. And so that encryption feature makes it really nice. And there is some setup involved in it. It takes a little bit of time, but the groups, and there are multiple groups across Ameron who have set up their own Meshtastic networks, and they have anywhere from 5 to 30 people set up in their mesh networks, you know, across valleys from each other, you know, 5-10 miles away. And so they can all communicate and coordinate with each other.
So,
using the app on their phone. Yeah.
Sorry, I just wanted to verify. So it's primarily for local though, right? It's not like I could get one set up and James could get one set up and we could communicate long distance through this. It has to be local. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's very local. Yep.
Okay.
I mean, if you wanted to set up a mesh network that covers 100 miles, you're going to have multiple nodes, users set up in between you and your farthest point that you got to reach. And you have to be able to reach each other line of sight. And this is the reason why we put so much emphasis on amateur radio, because oftentimes we'll get somebody that, you know, just about every time we do some type of communications training workshop, somebody pulls out their Baofeng and says, you know, I live in Utah. How can I talk to my brother in Wisconsin with this? Well, you can't. That requires HF communications. Outside, for unconventional communications, you're going to need a shortwave transceiver or HF, high frequency transceiver, to talk, you know, 100 to 1,000 or more miles. So it is very limited. All of these are very limited.
You know, that mesh thing you're networks. Talking about was, it brings you back to the days of Napster, when everybody sort of was there, everybody was almost the server, and everybody kind of got their files from everybody else's, you know, server. So it was almost like a closed network where everybody just kind of, their node was all open for everybody else to get their music from. That's kind of what that reminds me of. But only, you know, the Napster, of course, was internet related. This is sort of radio communication related. So that's why it's so limited in its scope. Is that accurate?
Well, what enables you to share music files with somebody in Germany is fiber optic cables connecting you.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, if you don't have that, then you're going over just, you're like, your Wi-Fi is a radio, you know, transceiver. Bluetooth is a radio transceiver. Your cell phone is a radio transceiver. So without running fiber optic cables to everybody in your network, which isn't practical, you know, you're going wirelessly. You're going over the air. So, but yes, really, when you set these type of mesh networks up, you can set up servers for sharing files and information with each other. And you can go so far as to set up email services and texting services and things like that with the mesh networks, like what I just described with like mesh Ubiquity. Now, Meshtastic right now is only text. And so, you know, there's pretty innovative people working on adding other capabilities to that, like voice, you know, for calling and sharing, you know, video and things like that. But the last that I've researched on it, it's not quite up to that point yet.
John, tell us about your book. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I thought you were finished. Tell us about your book afterwards. Go ahead, John. Sorry.
I'd be happy to talk about that. And the other two that I wanted to mention are really turnkey, ready to go, but they're getting harder to get. There's longer waiting lists for these. Two of them, the first one is, I'm drawing a blank. I've got Beartooth on my mind. Beartooth is one of them, so I'll just mention that now. Beartooth is it's a mesh network, and it's also encrypted. And they have radios that communicate with each other, and you connect with your cell phone through Bluetooth, and you can communicate with other people in your group many miles away, 5, 7 miles away. And the other one that I have is called GoTenna. That's what I was trying to think of. And it looks like almost like a fat USB type of dongle, but it's designed to wear on your gear or to, you know, hang on your backpack, and it interacts with your phone. And it is a booster, a radio booster that can go 5 to 7 miles line of sight. And these will also mesh with each other. So if you have a group of people in a downtown area, and everybody that's using these, they all become part of the mesh network. But you can also set up a group within your own group so that you can communicate only with, say, these 4 people. Even if there's 100 people in the area using a GoTenna, your app that you download to your cell phone talks through your GoTenna, and it acts as a repeater, and then it meshes your whole group together, and that's also encrypted, AES encrypted. And those are really nice. What's that?
Is that specific to cell, though, not radios? In other words, that's not going to boost your Baofeng, for example.
No, it is specifically, well, these radios, they have, I can't recall exactly what type of radio band it uses, but it's like, not cellular, but I'd have to look that back up. But I know that these can communicate, you know, up to 5-6 miles from each other. And so you talk, you know, from your cell phone, you pair it up using Bluetooth to pair up with the GoTenna. And then your GoTenna is what gives you the range, because our handheld radios, there are apps that don't require cellular service. Like Fire Chat used to be one that was really popular, but it only has a range of a couple hundred feet. So, you know, it's good if you want to stay in touch with your family and you're all at the fairgrounds and you don't have, you know, cellular coverage there. But these are really good for people working, you know, back in the backcountry, people that might be where there's no cell phone service available to them. You can send texts to each other, and you can send your location to each other. That gives you, you know, your GPS location. So if somebody's injured, you could just send your location and they walk right to you.
It's GoTenaMesh.com. I'm looking at it right now, John. I'm looking at it right now, John. It's pretty cool. It's like a little, looks like a little, one of those little, maybe little markers you use to mark on your whiteboard or something. I mean, it's pretty small. $199.
Yeah, it looks like one of those fat Scripto magic markers.
Yeah, it does. GoTenaMesh.com. GoTenaMesh.com. And we don't get any money from this. This is a unpaid sponsorship.
Yep.
Hey, if it works, it works, right? So, anyway.
Yeah, and it actually also, you can set these up as a repeater, for lack of a better term. So, well, you have users set up. Let's say you have a hill between you and another group. You could hang this up in a tree, and they charge off of a USB charging cable, just like your cell phone does, and they'll last for hours and hours or days depending on how much you're using them. Of course, the more it's transmitting, the faster it goes through battery power. But ours have lasted, you know, several days on a single charge. So you can hang one of those up in a tree, toss it up on a rooftop or, you know, whatever. And then you can communicate with other people in your group. It extends your range, you know, beyond obstacles like hills and things. And it becomes part of your mesh network.
It's really cool. You know, you can buy one of those little battery packs too. You know, those little battery packs that store, you know, the little charging lines? Packs.
Yeah.
And then you can actually, technically, if you set it up properly, you can just have that battery pack recharging that thing all the time. You know what I mean? I think you get, if you did it properly, you can have that set up, not too much work.
Right. And then you could have it running for weeks. I mean, I have one that's about the size of a cell phone, and you can charge a cell phone off of it like 20 times. So as little as these GoTennas use, you could have a relay node or repeater GoTenna set up someplace, and it would just run for weeks and weeks, you know, depending on the size of the battery pack that you got it connected to. And they're so they're really slick.
Amazing stuff, man. What a great interview.
And they're really
man.
Easy to set up. You know, there's not anything real technical for the user to set up. Now, there's another one that's similar to it, and that's Beartooth. And they are working on adding voice to that, so you can make voice calls to each other. And it is also AES 256 encryption. Probably one of the more expensive ones on the market. But there's something for everybody out there. You know, different people have different budgets. So if I didn't have to worry about the cost, I would look into and go with Beartooth, but they're spendy. They also create that mesh network with encryption.
Fantastic stuff. Well, we're going way over time here, John. Why don't you tell us about your book and how people can find out more about what you got going on? You know, this is what we need to do. We need to train folks, train them up on how to use radio communications, how to set up mesh networks, how to do these relay things like we were just talking about. You know, if you get one or two people in a group that learn it, then they can teach everyone else. But I know you have a book either out or coming out. Tell us about that.
Yeah, actually, they have, back on the mesh thing, remember, YouTube, we're not very happy with them because of the cancel culture type stuff they've been doing, but for technical information, YouTube is your friend. You can learn anything and everything and go as deep into any subject you want to, including setting up mesh networks. It's free information right at your fingertips, so there's no reason not to learn it. If you have an interest, it's out there. As far as the book, it's called The Partisan Operator Journals, and the one that I released last year is Volume 1. I'm working on Volume 2 right now, and it takes us to, it's a dystopian novel covering a couple of veterans, and one of them is a ham operator, and so he was a former Marine Force recon radio operator, and so what I really did with these characters, I took them 1 year after this major event called Zero Day. So the story starts at Zero Day plus 1 year. And it's at the point now where, you know, the United States has experienced this total collapse. There's a provisional government command structure that's trying to get established. And the story starts with him on a reconnaissance mission. And a foreign military begins showing up on U.S. soil to help stabilize the situation and, you know, bring aid. Well, it's really for much more nefarious purposes. Well, he ends up combining military tactics with ham radio equipment. And it's basically a fictional story about what somebody could use radios for, how they could use them with, you know, security in mind. And, of course, you know, the whole thing's an adventure and, you know, it's all fictional, but it's also realistic. And as far as what they use could be used in a real world situation. There's nothing in there that's not possible. So it's basically hoping that patriots that are radio operators give them ideas how they could start thinking unconventionally about how to use radio equipment, how that might be used in a post-collapse type of environment. And so it's a little more written toward the experienced radio operator that's never really thought about operating this way in that type of an environment. But the second book goes back to covering people that from all different ranges, people that have had no communications training whatsoever or very minimal, all the way to people that have more advanced communication skills and experience, and the different ways. And you'll see at some point here in the upcoming books and these characters, they'll be using mesh networks for communicating. And so it's kind of a how-to book wrapped in a fictional novel that's
you took the words
really
out of my mouth.
Feedback on it.
You took the words right out of my mouth, John. That's almost exactly what I was going to say. It's a how-to manual wrapped around a fiction, which, you know, I mean, that, yeah, if that's what it takes for people to learn it, to you know, hear an exciting novel and you know, an adventure, whatever it takes, man. If it's a song.
I would completely read that. Are there now? So you have one book already out and another one on the way. And where can people get those?
Right. Yeah, they're available on Amazon.com. It's Partisan Operator Journals. And we were selling them and shipping them, but it just got to be too much because it was self-published. And it just got too much for us to be able to handle all the shipping and everything with everything else we got going on. So we just let Amazon handle it. And, it's the best way we were able to keep the cost down to the readers. And, So we're excited about that. And I've had so much feedback from people that are ham operators, or people that they got excited about it because they realized what they could do, the possibilities of it. So they learned communications, they got their ham radio license, and then had experienced operators write to me saying, man, this stuff, I never really thought about implementing this or that. And I've tried it and it works and it's cool. And it's been a pretty cool adventure.
Wow, man. That's fantastic stuff. John, I'll tell you, we're just coming to the end here. Let people know where they can find out more about you on radiofreeredoubt.com and then Amron and the Amron Network. You probably want to send people there, I imagine, as well. So let people know when they can hear your radio broadcast. I think you're still broadcasting every morning. They're over at Tom Reed's network. Tom, what a great guy over there in Spokane. Love Tom.
Yep.
You were over there on his network. I broadcasted him for a long time, as you know. Tell us a little bit about where we can find you, where we can find your radio broadcasts and websites and that type of thing, John.
Absolutely. Well, like I said, the Radio Free Redoubt podcast, it's a weekly podcast produced every Sunday. That's kind of our flagship. That's where we got started. But then my wife, Lady Liberty, and I do a morning show, 7 a.m. Pacific time every morning. It's a 30-minute show. We talk about current events from, a Christian perspective. It's Liberty Broadcasting, which is an American Christian Network affiliate. And, she was involved in property rights and patriot to the core for years. And then she started doing the Liberty Radio, Liberty State Radio, and then now we join forces here. So it's really talking about the truth in the news and the scripture. We cover the word of the day every day and how that applies to us. She also has two books out too that
now tell us about
the first one was just like serious research into it's called The Perils of Sustainable Development, and it's a mind-blowing thing of connecting dots.
That's right up Corey's alley. That is right up Corey's alley. You're singing her song. You're singing her tune right there, JJ.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, she's been, I don't know how many radio interviews and articles and stuff that she's done over the years. It's been crazy. Then Then she wrote 444 last year, you know, the formula for restoring America and you know, identifying the problems. Basically, it's kind of it was the perils of sustainable development was a warning of what's coming if it's not stopped. And 444 was, well, now that we're here, this is how we deal with it. But yeah, pretty cool. So it's awesome being able to do the radio show together every day. And then, of course, Amaron, that's a full time job in and of itself. And that website is Amaron.com. Amaron is the American Redoubt Radio Operators Network, nationwide network. And we've got thousands of radio operators, members that have, you know, joined all across the country and Canada and Puerto Rico and elsewhere. So, yeah, it's a lot going on. And we're just trying to prepare people for the challenges that we're got right in our faces. And yeah, the communications is so critical. It's really overlooked. And so we're doing our part to try to fill that gap.
And we appreciate it.
Yeah, great interview. What great information, man. Great, fantastic. People don't even hardly think about it. They think of food, they think of water, they think of shelter, which are important. But, you know, like you said, what if your power grid goes down? How do you know it's not like a massive power grid across, you know, the country? I mean, you don't know if it's local. You don't know what's going on if you can't communicate.
Right.
It's all just a shot in the dark. Do me a favor, if you can, tell the great Tom Reed I said hello. Probably the smoothest radio voice I've ever heard in my life, that guy. What a fantastic guy he is, man.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Reed, what a great dude. Please tell him I said hello next time you talk to him, John. I appreciate that. Anything, Corey, you want to say to John?
Will do.
To Johnny?
No, I just appreciate you for coming on and sharing a wealth of information for everyone. We're going to have to put some of these into the information you've shared into links, James, so people can find some of this.
Oh, yeah, definitely. For sure. I was bringing some of that stuff up while he was talking about it. It looks like some pretty cool stuff there. I went to all those sites. Yeah, it's good stuff. We will do that. We'll put those links in there. Johnny, anything you want to say before we let you go, brother?
Nope. I just appreciate the opportunity and thank you for all the work you guys are doing as well. And every day, just keep doing something. You can't let your foot off the gas now, not in the times that we're in.
Yeah, good advice. John Jacob Schmidt, we too appreciate you being here today. That's going to wrap it up here for us today on this edition of the Solution Series, brought to you by Solari.com and Corey'sDigs.com. And for our guest, John Jacob Schmidt, and my co-host, Corey Lynn, this is James White for the Solution Series saying bye now.